right, my talkers, we are hanging out right now with Lori and Julia down at Showplace Icon Theaters here for Project Down and Dirty Film Fest, and we had a great day filming to guys, did we not?
Oh, that was hysterical. That was hysterical. I got up at 5 a.m. to start putting my wardrobe together for the day.
I would imagine, based on what I saw.
Oh, and Julia came in. I mean, Julia. And then we're having help from friends, very talented friends.
This is the thing, because we've all determined, the three of us, zero talent in this, sort of.
Acting. Yeah.
So we're surrounding ourselves with talent.
The very best.
And that's true.
Which is so great for our movie that we're making.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be so funny.
I promise you guys, I tweeted this last night. I said, I can promise you guys this. Your shows at My Talk are working very hard.
Yes.
To give you
entertainment,
like, unbelievable entertainment. Mm-hmm. P.S. Don't forget to donate to whatever charity you like. Of course, we're raising money for the Alexander House, and we're at we almost have $1,600.
We do,
and the other teams are doing well, but they've all been on the air today, so now our people are really going to crank up their wallets, and we've got a little incentive for them today based on a story you told us yesterday, because every movie has to include a creepy doll.
Yes.
The My Talk people voted on it.
Yes.
That's what won. And so it has to be in a scene in a movie. And that brought up a story about you having a doll.
Yes. My mother has had a doll in our house my entire life that has my baby outfit on. And the story goes...
Like your first picture?
My first baby picture.
It's like an American doll for you.
Yes, of me.
Of boy.
The story behind it is, I thought my godmother gave it to her, but I talked to my mom last night, and I got to give Bev credit here. She made this at a ceramic class, this doll herself. She painted the face and everything. And so she... and the
creepily looks like you.
It kind of
does. In a cute little way.
Yes.
A cute, creepy way.
And so this doll, we have a picture of me as a baby, my first baby picture, and the doll, and we want to release these two photos on social media if we can reach our goal today of getting to $2,500.
Yes. Oh, we want to get to $2,500 by like 4:30.
Okay, 4:30.
Yes. And then we'll have another little goal.
We do,
and just see how much people have appreciated their 20 years of LoJ, $1 a year.
But yes, if you want to see a little baby Grant, which is pretty funny, the doll is...
This picture is priceless. The two side by side. It is uncanny.
Yes. It's unbelievable, Grant.
Yeah, it is. And so I got to give really... yesterday, I don't think I gave my godmother as much credit. I didn't realize
she made listen
it.
To Bev?
She's a diehard My Talker.
Oh, my gosh.
She listens to all the shows. So
Bev, you've got a future in making creepy baby dolls.
You do.
It's amazing. So thank you, Bev.
We do.
Okay, so we want to get to $2,500.
For the release of the doll.
Picks. Okay, lovely. And
we got to give a shout out to Angelo, just gave $600, not to us, but to another charity. But
that's
thank
so
you.
Nice.
Thank
that's
you,
so generous. And people, Anonymous gave $100. I mean, people are really giving a lot of money. So thank you, everybody, to donating to whatever charity. I mean, we're here to raise money for charities that don't usually get money raised for them.
Right. And so awareness about the organizations.
And I just really, that's like super generous. So
$600, very nice. Any amount is huge.
It's huge.
Any amount.
And like Lori said, we're just really, we think $1 a year since we've been on the air is not asking too much. That's a $20 donation.
Right.
And we have such a great show today. We're super excited. Grant arranged us. We are talking to Mike Rinder, who, along with Leah Remini, did the TV show on A&E, Scientology in the Aftermath, which just exposed so many people to the bad things Scientology does.
And Mike Rinder is, he was raised in Scientology.
Yes.
And when he left, I think, at the age of 52, I mean, his wife divorced him, his mom, his sister, no one talks to him.
His children don't talk to him.
Right, and he's been smeared by Scientology. And this is the first book, I believe, that he's written. And he is the one that orchestrated Scientology getting tax exempt status back in the day.
Yes, he is.
He reached the highest level in Scientology.
Former senior executive of Scientology. And Scientology, how they
attack.
Here's the website they sent up. Who is Mike Rinder?
They do this for everybody who leaves. They did this for Leah Remini, Paul Haggis, anyone who does anything, they will start smearing, attacking, following. He gets surveilled. His garbage. This is all still happening, and he's been gone like at least, I don't know.
Since the late aughts, like 2007 or 9, I think.
Something like that. And we're excited to talk to him. And his first book is called A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology.
Headlines everywhere. So this is a big hit. Thanks, Grant. Yeah. This is really exciting today. So that's at 3:30.
And Mike's real excited to be here. Connection.
Well, and he knows Tony Ortega at the Underground Bunker, who's a friend of our show.
Yes,
and Leah Remini, you know, she's been on our show and her sister listens.
Yes.
So
should be fun.
Nicole.
Yeah, and my brother is the one who actually alerted me to Mike having a book come out, because my brother really follows... You know, everything, what's going on. He just gets so incensed at what they've done to families and people. Mm-hmm. And so he's the one who told me a couple months ago, hey, Mike and I ended up sliding into his DMs on Twitter, Julia. And said,
oh, dear.
Yeah, I know it. I never have slid into anybody's DMs before.
Either of I don't know how to do it.
So anyway, and then he told me, like, who you could get him. Yeah, so thanks, Grant.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, so it pays sometimes to just have somebody doing a little research for you. You know?
Yes, and so we're raising money for...
The Alexander House.
Yes.
Which their mission is to support and educate people about
domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. And pretty powerful organization. And it's a tough topic.
Yes.
And we've found that sometimes people are like... Oh, well, I don't know if I want to give my money to that, because there's a blame and shame thing that goes on with domestic violence, but it can happen to anybody.
Exactly. And hopefully some people who maybe are experiencing it right now can just hear and know that this is a great resource to have.
Yes.
So donating is one thing, but we want also people to hear that there is a place that they can go if they need help.
That's right. Thank you, Grant.
I know it.
I'm losing my voice from all of our strenuous
Lori,
movie performing and acting.
I'm listening to that. I'm thinking, oh gosh, here we go.
Well, Julia, I mean, it's real. I lose my voice.
Do you guys remember earlier when Bill, the sound guy, yelled at me for laughing too much during filming?
Oh, well, I know.
So you might hear my giggle in the back of the movie at some
point
in time.
You have a great giggle.
And that was not intentional. I got in trouble for it. He looked at me like...
Quiet on the set.
Yes, I don't realize we're not doing radio, you know, so...
Yeah, those mics pick up everything.
Yeah, you guys were hysterical today.
Oh, we'll see.
All right, listen, go to MyTalk1071 if you are inclined to give a donation. That would be so appreciated. And we come back, it's our story. We can't get enough of.
In the movie, this one's kind of an easy one for us. We are, broadcasting from the Twin Cities Film Fest headquarters at Showplace Icon in St. Louis Park all week for Project Down and Dirty. We are raising money for the Alexander House, and we want to thank our recent people: Clinton, Anonymous. And Angela, again, for the $600. Thank you, everybody, for donating. We know...
So where are we at for our goal of $2,500?
We're at $1,800. So we just need another... Yeah, Grant, do the math.
Yeah, do the
700.
Math.
700, there we go.
730 to get you your amazing photo.
Did you see how I quickly knew that number?
I didn't even do
Can
the
I
math.
Tell you why?
Why?
I have been partaking in...
math class?
Well, sort of. It's called Cribbage Online, but I do my own adding.
Okay.
Because the machine will do it for you, and I'm trying to play Cribbage Pro and doing all my own adding.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I feel like it's helping me.
I'm not going to argue with you.
Because
if you say it's true, I believe you.
Belong to something else where I do math online, and I fail all the time, and I'm like, I try to get to the next one. It reminds me why I got kicked out of Arizona State University. I couldn't pass the math class.
Yeah, business and then not being
just
able to
division.
Do the math is
division.
Always
I can do percent. We can do percentages, not division. Anyway, okay, so you were so delighted because we saw two people do an interview together that we've really never seen.
I don't recall. I mean, we've seen them on a couple of red carpets, and we were talking about George and Amal Clooney. And they
you
were,
know who you are.
Yeah, and Mr. and Mrs. Clooney.
Say my name. You say my name,
and
George.
And they were on with Gayle King on CBS Morning News. And so the only time I've ever really seen them together and talking is a little bit of chit-chat on a red carpet. Remember that very first year they were married?
Mm-hmm.
She went to the red carpet, and Joan Collins then at the SAG Award, showed us how to do gloves because Amal wore white gloves.
Yes.
With a black gown. And Joan Collins made a point of coming to everybody and showing black gloves are what you wear on a red carpet.
Because white are to be worn at royal events, I thought.
Yeah, something like that. So anyway, but they talked a little bit, but I don't really ever remember seeing them sit down together for an interview. And they have a foundation and they do all kinds of amazing work. And she's an incredible lawyer. And I love their love story.
Oh,
you know, I love your love story with Jeff, and I love George and Amal's love story.
And we love Scott right now. Thank you for your donation.
Okay, so, but, you know, they really did find each other. So, of course, this is the second part of the interview where Gail is now, they're done talking about the serious stuff, and she just wants to gouge about their romance.
Yes.
We are back with more of our conversation with Amal and George Clooney. Look at the way these two look at each other. I can't get over this. The power couple joined us in studio on a very big day for them. It was their 8th wedding anniversary. They told us all about falling in love, raising their kids, and the one thing they say they've never done. As we sit here today, it's your 8th wedding anniversary.
Yes.
And George, people said, George Clooney's, at the time, Amal, George Clooney's getting married?
Yeah, come on, man.
Getting married?
8 years. Yeah.
Because you were known as a confirmed bachelor. But you met Amal Clooney, and what happened to you, George?
I was no longer confirmed. It was easy. It was the minute she walked in the door, I was just, you know, taken by her. And the fun part was, you know, I didn't know whether, you know, she would like me or any of those things. And then
wait, George, stop it. And then you know if Amal would like you.
Yes. And I, you know, and then, you know, she's this extraordinarily, you know, fun, smart, beautiful, great woman. And, you know, it was I was just very taken with her, and I started writing her letters.
What did he say, Amal, in the letters?
The letters, some of them came from his dog, and it was sort of the fear.
You know, who's going to be mad at a dog?
The dog needed a human rights lawyer to rescue him from the wine cellar. I remember that was.
Uh-huh. So you, of course, knew who he was, Amal, but were you taken with him, too?
I definitely
or did you think he's a Hollywood movie star? I don't know.
I met him and I thought, I'm so glad that there's someone like him in the world. I didn't necessarily imagine that I would get to spend my life with him or that we would have this incredible family.
Yeah.
So it took me by surprise.
She screwed my life up, man. life was easy for me. And now I got twins running around.
Yes, yes. What do they do, guys, that just delight you? Because I know at 5 they are very chatty. You know, and
we've made a terrible mistake.
What?
Oh. Well, we taught them Italian. But we don't speak Italian.
Oh, okay.
So we've armed them with a language that they can harm us with.
That's true.
And we don't really know what
they both speak Italian?
Yeah, and French.
No, I thought you were going to say that what delights you is that your son...
I'm from Kentucky. You know, English is my second language.
So our son is now a big prankster. And he's basically, you've taught him all of these lessons, and he's now pranking his dad back.
Alexander's favorite superhero is Batman.
Oh.
You know? And he goes, you know, I said, what's your favorite superhero? He goes, you know, Batman. And I go, you know, I was Batman. And he goes... Yeah, but not anymore. If only he knew how true that was.
Well, people are so delighted that you're together. And somebody told me once, you know, whenever you're talking to a couple, the question isn't how do you make it work? It's how do you stay together? What is it that you give to each other that makes you stay together? I think it starts with love, George. I do think that.
Oh, it does start with love. I mean, it's sort of the whole secret to it. It's never, ever been even... I mean, it's funny. That's not even a question that we would even think of. I mean, it's just been easy.
Listen, has it been easy?
Easy. Like, the easiest thing in our lives, by far. We've never had a
It's maddening argument. To some of our friends. I have a cousin, actually. Every time we see him, he's like, his first question is, so have you had an argument yet? Like, before he says hello. Yeah.
Would you like us to right now? Make you feel better?
No. Could be a first.
No.
Okay, that's good. That's good. But
that's
they were so cute together, and I love that she introduced them all first, Amal and George Clooney, and Gail was kind of stepping all over the two of them.
I can't believe the twins are already 5 years old.
They're 5 years old, yeah. And we've only just seen that one little photo of them.
I know.
Anyway, I just thought it was just a breath of morning fresh air because it was just pretty much, you know, a weather Woody type of situation with this Category 5 hurricane in Florida. Yes.
And we have a lot of friends who have places in Naples and Fort Myers and Native Springs.
So many Minnesota people
that
have
that are
homes.
All worried about their homes. And I have friends traveling there this weekend.
No, so pretty much all of the news was that this morning.
Because it's coming.
Yes.
Right on land. Yeah.
Right. And so they had taped this a couple days ago because they've been in New York and they go out to dinner every night.
When is this movie happening?
Oh, they showed a trailer for that in the middle of Bachelor to Paradise.
Ticket to Paradise?
Ticket to Paradise. Yeah. It had a special little good right away at the top of the show. They did a trailer. I think it's October. Middle of October.
With Julia Roberts, where they're divorced parents and their daughter has suddenly met someone once, get married right away.
Right away, that's right.
And they're going to kibosh it. Something like that.
And they're on a fabulous
destination wedding that they're going to go try to cancel it out.
Yeah.
I think it'll be fun.
So anyway, so they had taped that interview a couple days ago, and I'd been seeing paparazzi photos, and she always wears like the greatest clothes.
Oh, she, wow.
Oh my gosh.
She's gorgeous.
And she's tall and lean, and they're just such a good looking couple, and I'm so delighted they're so happy.
I love how he said, until she came and screwed up my life.
Yeah, right. And then the dog, if you need a romantic tactic.
Yeah, right. Send
write someone a letter from your dog.
So, I love that.
That's a baller move.
That is a baller move.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Mike Rinder with us. This is Lori and Julia on My Talk.
Hey, everybody. We are so excited. We have a really great book for you guys. It's the Loj Book Club. So remember, if you go to the book club restaurant and you mention Lori and Julia or the book club, you can get a free appetizer or free dessert.
With your meal.
And we're so excited. Mike Rinder is joining us. He's written a book called A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome, ladies.
Okay,
oh my gosh.
We're huge fans of yours.
Yeah, and we are in admiration and awe of you and your and really how we got to know you was through the Scientology and the Aftermath show on A&E.
We're
in admiration of what you're doing to expose Scientology and their evil ways. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on, and thank you for being fans.
Oh, we've really been kind of obsessed with Scientology forever, but, you know, maybe just to help everybody understand, because you were, you know, we're in Scientology, you were at the very top. What was your decision in 2007? What was the final straw that made you leave Scientology?
Well, I was in London at the time dealing with a reporter from the BBC named John Sweeney. And John was intrepidly pursuing a line of inquiry about the fact that David Miscavige, the leader of Scientology, was physically assaulting people. And he showed up at the Scientology building in London, and I happened to be there, and he had a camera crew, and he came out, and he was basically pressing me on the fact that David Miscavige was physically assaulting people, and I was denying it and saying it was lies and that, you know, we were going to sue the BBC. And he said, well, I've got, you know, eyewitnesses that say that David Miscavige has been physically beating on you. And I said, oh, no, that's not true. Well, it was very true. And it was something that I was, you know, sort of ate away at me. This is not why I got into Scientology. I didn't come here to be the spokesperson to protect David Miscavige, who was around beating people up and abusing them. I wanted, you know, it like just rubbed me the wrong way. I had done a lot in Scientology and a lot as the spokesperson, but this one was like, oh God, how can I be defending this indefensible thing? But what had kept me there was the fact that I had two children and a wife who were also part of what's called the C organization, or the inner circle of Scientology. And I did not want to lose them shortly thereafter. And I described this at some length in the book. Miscavige said, well, you're never coming back to the United States. I'm going to send you to the farthest reaches of the world in disgrace. And I went, okay, well, I guess that's it. There's nothing more for me to be around for. I'm escaping.
And you escaped and you left. I mean, basically, your whole family disconnected from you.
Correct. Yeah, my children, my wife, my mother, my brother, my sister, my nieces, my nephews, everybody who was in Scientology, which at that time was my, or it still is, my entire family.
Mm-hmm. Have you, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Mike Rinder. His book is A Billion Years, His Escape from Scientology, A Life at the Highest Level of Scientology. And, you know, we got to know you when Leah Remini and you did Scientology in the Aftermath starting in 2016.
Emmy winning, by the way.
And we know that you also have a podcast that you do with Leah called Fair Game.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, Leah didn't leave until 2013. You left in 2007. Were you alone or were you looking for other people that had left?
Because you were at such a high level.
Well, I, fortunately for me, there were other people who I had known very well, one of whom was Tom DeVocht, who was someone that had sort of grown up in Scientology with me, and he had left a little, like maybe a year before, and I first reached out to him. I contacted him from London and arranged to fly to see and stay with him in Orlando. And then I reached out to the two people who were like my closest and oldest friends in when I was in Scientology, which happened to be Ronnie and Biddy Miscavige, which was David Miscavige, the leader of Scientology's older brother and his wife. And I had known Biddy since I first arrived in the Sea Org in 1973, and she was very close friends with my wife, and they had left also some 2 or 3 years before I did, or maybe a little bit more than that, and they very kindly took me in and gave me a place to live and helped me find my first job and sort of get me on my feet.
Right, because we know from watching Scientology in the Aftermath and watching, you know, the movie that was done, I can't think of the name of it right now, and really
Going Clear. And reading that book.
And reading the book and just following Scientology, because we all really, really, really got exposed to it when Tom Cruise jumped the couch and his sister started taking over his PR, and how in-depth, I mean, really kind of that was like the moment. So, you know, your book is getting excerpts all over.
Yeah, and rave reviews.
We're so delighted that you're on with us today. And you talked about the reason you're leaving because the head of this quote-unquote church, the Church of Scientology, was an abusive man who beat you. And if you know that, how does a person, and this is what we always struggle with, how does a person like Tom Cruise, who must know this, continue to be in that organization?
Well, the best answer I have for that is, A, I did for a long time, and you know, what ultimately causes people to wake up and leave is a very individual, you know, thing. There's no common formula for what that is. But if you promise someone and you dangle a carrot in front of them of eternal salvation, or you'll be able to improve your life, or you can help every man, woman, and child on planet Earth as long as you follow this path, that is a very, very powerful motivating factor. You know, Larry Wright didn't call his book Going Clear, Scientology in the Prison of Belief, for no reason. It is a prison of belief. And, you know, you can persuade someone that there is something good to be had, even if you do bad things or think bad things or act in a bad way, that it's for the greatest good. And, you know, this will be ultimately the your salvation and the salvation for a lot of other people. That will hold a lot of people in place for a long time. and it will prevent them from seeing what the real truth is, because they just reject it out of hand and go, oh, this is just lies, or, oh, this is people trying to stop mankind's only hope. And that is the hold that Scientology has over people, and why they tolerate things that normal people would just go, I'd never put up with that, I just walk out.
Right. Well,
yes, normal people would, but they're not normal people. They have been indoctrinated into a belief system that leads them to hang on to the hope that something good is coming.
It's so wild to hear you say that, because people on the outside were like, what is wrong with all those people? How do they believe in this crazy making?
Well, that's why, like, with Leah Remini, it was, you know, fascinating, because she was really, you know, she didn't have a choice. She was a kid, and that does happen with second and third generation Scientologists. But for her epiphany, the famous Where's Shelley? And that became something that we, you know, everyone instantly knows what that means now. So, I mean, that's pretty incredible, Mike. Just the two of you, what you've done.
Yes, it is. I honestly got to say, I am very proud of the work that we did with the Aftermath show, because it brought the stories of individual Scientologists into the minds and the homes of people all over the country, and they looked and they went, I get it. These are just, they're normal people. They're not crazies. They're not nutcases. That could have been me. That could have been me that got involved in this. And because it's very easy to dismiss something like Scientology and just go, I'd never get involved. That's just for the weak and disabled and the mentally incapacitated. It's not. It attracts good people. And
agreed.
Organizations like Scientology do that. They attract good people.
You know what? We have to take a quick break, Mike. We're with Mike Rinder. His new book, his first book, his memoir, A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life at the Highest Ranks of Scientology, just came out on September 27th. I have no idea the date today. We're doing
it was Tuesday was his book birthday.
Mike, we're making a film right now for charity, and we don't know what day it is. And when we come back, it's the truth. We want to know why now? Why did you decide to release this book now? If you can hang on for a minute.
Okay, I will tell you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. This is Lori and Julia. We're broadcasting live from the Twin Cities Film Fest headquarters. We will be right back.
The movie is Grease. The topic is the Low J Book Club. We are so delighted. We've got a great book recommendation for you. Mike Rinder is joining us. We could talk to you for 2 hours, Mike. His book, A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology. And you were in it. I mean, Mike, you were young age, signed your billion-year contract. I mean, so you have got stories for days. And Julia had asked you before we went on the break, what made you want to write this book now?
Well, honestly, a lot of people have asked me, well, why haven't you ever written a book? Why didn't you write a book? And I started, and I couldn't really get myself interested to apply myself enough, and I was worried that I wouldn't get everything right, and that I'd forgotten stuff, and blah, blah, blah. And then COVID hit, and we couldn't do any TV shows. We weren't doing, basically, nothing was happening. And my wife said to me, okay, why don't you occupy your time now and actually write the book? And I went, yep, okay, I should. It'll probably be, in the end, helpful to me. And ultimately, it really was. It was very cathartic to finally get everything out. Like, I've told various bits and pieces of things that have occurred in my life, but never been able to put it all together. And I guess delve also into the thought processes. Like, what was I thinking at the time? How was I viewing things? And that's, I feel, a very important part of this book, is to help people understand how you can get people or persuade people to do things that aren't in their best interests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mike, one of the things, so Julia and I have been on the radio for 20 years, so since 2002, and gossip is our middle name. And one of the things we remember when Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise were filming the Kubrick film, Eyes Wide Shut, because we were just fascinated that this movie was taking
forever,
and there was some gossip coming out of England. And if you can just share a little bit of what went on, because it was shortly after that
they got divorced,
but not until he remarried her, and you know what I mean, he did this big thing. I mean that's a fascinating story.
Yeah, well, I don't know much about the remarriage and all that sort of stuff, but I do know that David Miscavige became increasingly agitated that Tom had sort of dropped out of touch with him while he was off shooting Eyes Wide Shut on the notoriously closed set of Stanley Kubrick. And as you said, it was happening in London, and there was a secondary fear that Nicole was, you know, sort of dragging Tom away from Scientology. And there had always been a worry about Nicole because her father is a psychiatrist. And that is a big, big, big no-no in Scientology. Psychiatry is the devil. And, you know, had she not been the other half of the Tom Cruise world, she would not have been in Scientology. She would not have been allowed to be in Scientology. And Miscavige was pretty panicked that Tom Cruise was being weaned away from the Scientology world by Nicole when they were out of touch and out of sort of the influence of Scientology while they were shooting that film. And in fact, he sent me to visit with Tom's sister, Leanne, who was, I'm not sure if she'd become his publicist by then, maybe, maybe not, but to meet with Leanne and find out what was going on. And, you know, and Leanne reassured me everything's fine and Tom's fine and Nicole's fine. And yes, they're just busy and they're stuck on the set. And, you know, of course, I went back and reported that to Miscavige, and he was like, nope. And he then dispatched Marty Rathbun ultimately to go bring Tom back into the fold. And the, you know, the final outcome of that was he got back being the more dedicated Scientologist, and she ended up going off to start a new life and no longer active in Scientology.
Yeah, and you know, we always were fascinated too within the whole rollout of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. It was just so, that just gave us fodder for days. But we were, I feel like there's truth to the fact that Katie Holmes left Scientology because at six, kids start getting indoctrinated, and she didn't want that for Suri. Is that true?
I have no idea. Okay. I have not talked to Katie. I've never even met Katie. She came along
after you were gone.
I was already, you know, in the hole. So I don't really know the answer to that. I guess there is some reason to believe that that could be true, because, yes, it is true that Scientology auditing typically starts being done when a child is around the age of six.
I mean, that just freaks me out when I think of some of the questions they get asked.
Yeah, I know. They are pretty bizarre.
And so if you're just joining us, we're with Mike Rinder. He has written his memoir, A Billion Years. It just came out yesterday, My Escape from a Life at the Highest Ranks of Scientology. And, you know, we're friends with Tony Ortega, the underground bunker. He used to write for the Village Voice and has always been on top of all things Scientology. And it used to be that, you know, if you were in the media,
no one would cover it.
You couldn't even cover it. Do you, Mike, you know, you said writing this book kind of put things in perspective for you and want other people to know that good people get sucked into this, the promise. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest, I remember when there was a Scientology or Christian Dynamics Center, I don't know if they're the same thing or something, downtown Minneapolis, and I'd like walk on the other side of the street because I'm like, I'm kind of feeling like they could get me right now. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're feeling an ounce vulnerable, you avoid things. You avoid it. But thank you so much for writing this. Is there, You know, we've seen some excerpts about maybe John Travolta and some other things in the news, you know, since your book has come out. Is there, have you had any peace with your family that's still in there, in Scientology?
No.
Doesn't that stinks. I'm sorry for you.
And that's, you know, the other reason why I wrote the book. The book is addressed to my children that are still in Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
With the hope that one day they will read it. And this came about from some very brilliant advice from the person I consider is one of the all-time greatest American writers, which is Lawrence Wright, who wrote Going Clear. And I was talking to him, and I said, Larry, you know, people are telling me to write a book. What should I do? And he said, here's my best piece of advice to you. Write a book that is important to you, that has meaning for you. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, the best book I think I ever wrote was one that nobody knows about, really, and it's about letters to my parents. He said, knowing your story, I think you should take the time to write the story for your children. Your life, from what you want your children to know about you because they don't know you, and what you went through, and what your thought processes were, and how you feel about it, that is what I think would make a great book. And that's what I've attempted to do.
We're so excited to read it. Oh, we didn't have time to get it. This is such a big deal to us, Mike, that you're on our show. You know, Lori and I, like I said, Scientology has kind of been our thread for 20 years that we've been on the air. Are you and Leah going to be doing more TV together?
Well, I don't know. That depends if any network wants to you know, air Scientology-related stuff. They get a lot of threats and a lot of pressure, and A&E withstood it, and they took it on. So maybe someone else will at some point. But there's nothing imminent. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Right. Do you think, Mike, that do you think that Tom Cruise, like, he just, how come he never gets asked about Scientology on a red carpet?
Because he insists that nobody ask him about it. Okay. They're going to get blackballed. You know, when he does press
tickets
for movies, he requires that they agree not to ask him about it in order to get the interview.
We're going to talk to you again, Mike.
Mike is fabulous. Thank you so much.
Buy the book, people. It was so great talking
to you. Thank
you,
ladies.
Okay.
Absolutely. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, lovely. A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology by Mike Rinder.
For 9 years, a dangerous man terrorized women, breaking into homes and raping his victims before killing a brilliant young scientist in 1998.
The more the victims resisted, the more violent he became.
Then he suddenly stops, leaving police with a lot of clues and one unknown subject.
I'm Paul Wagner. Join me October 4th for Unknown Subject, Season 3 of WTOP's American Nightmare podcast series. Search American Nightmare Podcast on all podcast platforms.